Hey, everybody. I'd like to share with you a paradox that I've encountered here in Washington, D.C. as the new Secretary of HHS. Our department is filled for the most part with competent, conscientious public servants, and yet the agency has been inefficient as a whole. Over the past 4 years during the Biden administration, HHS's budget increased by 38%. And its staffing increased by 17%, but all that money has failed to improve the health of Americans. In fact, the rate of chronic disease and cancer increased dramatically as our department has grown. Our lifespan has dropped, so Americans now live 6 years shorter than Europeans. We are the sickest nation in the world, and we have the highest rate of chronic disease. The U.S. ranks last among 40 developed nations in terms of health, but we spend 2 to 3 times more per capita than those nations. As Secretary, I now understand why all this money is not improving our health. HHS is a sprawling bureaucracy that encompasses literally hundreds of departments, committees, and other offices. You know how bureaucracies work. Every time a new issue arises, they tack on another committee. This leads to tremendous waste and duplication, and worst of all, a loss of any unified sense of mission. The resulting pandemonium has injured American health and damaged department morale. When I arrived, I found that over half of our employees don't even come to work. HHS has more than 100 communications offices and more than 40 IT departments and dozens of procurement offices and 9 HR departments. In many cases, they don't even talk to each other. They're mainly operating in silos. Sometimes these sub-agencies work at cross purposes with each other. Some of these little fiefdoms, for example, are so insulated and territorial that they actually hoard our patient medical data and sell it for profit to each other. Instead of remedying the chronic disease crisis, perverse incentives have administrators checking boxes and grading their own homework while public health declines. A few isolated divisions are neglecting public health altogether and seem only accountable to the industries that they're supposed to be regulating. In one case, defiant bureaucrats impeded the secretary's office from accessing the closely guarded databases that might reveal the dangers of certain drugs and medical interventions.
That was the voice of Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., which I just think it's been fabulous that he himself gave up his life. He's got, you know, he's probably a multimillionaire. His life's work has been disease and vaccines and all kinds of things and healthy eating and kind of new medicines outside of the realm of what we are accustomed to with our system here. He's been kind of an amazing person. And he came in, of course, wanting to transform our health services to get rid of all the wokeness, the disgusting things that were happening. In fact, I should stop and just give you an idea. Admiral Rachel Levin was the Assistant Secretary of Health and for the U.S. Department of Health and Services before Robert F. Kennedy came in. And of course, it was a mess. It was a mess in many different ways. Let me just remind you of how crazy things were. This is Rachel Levin, clip 2.
Well, Senator, thank you for your interest in this question. Transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field with robust research and standards of care that have been developed. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health, I will look forward to working with you and your office and coming to your office and discussing the particulars of the standards of care for transgender medicine.
The specific question was about minors. Let's be a little more specific since you evaded the question. What I'm alarmed at is that you're not willing to say absolutely minors shouldn't be making decisions to amputate their breast or to amputate their genitalia. For most of our history, we believe that minors don't have full rights and the parents need to be involved. So I'm alarmed that you won't say with certainty that minors should not have the ability to make the decision to take hormones that will affect them for the rest of their life. Will you make a more firm decision on whether or not minors should be involved in these decisions?
Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field, and if confirmed to the position of Assistant Secretary of Health, I would certainly be pleased to come to your office and talk with you and your staff about the standards of care and the complexity of this field.
Let it go into the record that the witness refused to answer the question.
All right, so that's kind of a glimpse of the past. Secretary Kennedy was talking about in the opening is how broken down, how overgrown, how dysfunctional the Department of Health and Human Services had become. Of course, out of that then came terrible, terrible things. We're talking about transgender, about pushing hormones, about, you heard Rachel Richard, who dressed as a woman. And would make these statements with the long hair, blonde hair, looking again like Benjamin Franklin, no exaggeration, making a fool out of our nation, making a fool out of all of us, really, and put in that prominent position, abortion for all 9 months. And then, of course, there's that little thing called COVID, which they lied to us through their department, the CDC and the National Institutes for Health, just broken down. Not broken down, but just used by wicked people like Dr. Anthony Fauci. That was the condition when Robert F. Kennedy came in to take that office. And he himself, as I said, made a lot of sacrifices. So the person we're going to be talking to today is the replacement for Richard Rachel Levin. And the contrast is amazing and blessed and glorious, I have to tell you. I heard him speak at the Museum of the Bible a few months ago, and I was blown away. And I wanted you to hear him for yourselves. And so we'll be talking today to Admiral Brian Christine. It's pretty amazing, and it's going to be fun. So don't you go anywhere. But first, we talk about how to save babies all the time and their mothers, because preborn focuses on the mom and the dad, if you'll come and talk to them, because they actually provide ultrasound images of the baby in the womb. And it's amazing. It's so powerful. You know, even if it's not your baby and you see that, it's just an amazing, really to me, a sign of the existence of God and his handiwork. Because how in the world can you explain the intricacies, the development in the gestational period of babies to have, you know, fingers sucking and little eyes and a little cute nose. And you can sometimes even already see that the baby looks like a person, the mother or the father or grandmother or something. And it's very moving. And so what they do is powerful. And so we want to give them a shout out all the time. And they help support this show. That's the least important thing I want to tell you. But I'm grateful that they do, because I'm so grateful they're our partners. It's very important to me to save lives. I felt that way for, you know, since I even became aware of abortion when I was 21. It was shocking to me. So if you want to help Preborn provide those ultrasounds, it's $28 for one ultrasound. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right, well, stay tuned, because next up will be this great conversation with Admiral Christine on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Well, right now, of course, at Health and Human Services, we're focusing on health equity. Healthy People 2030 defines health equity as the highest attainment of health for all people. And that really informs, under Secretary Javier Becerra, much of our work at HHS. So we are working, for example, on the impacts of climate change on health with a new Office of Climate Change and Health Equity. We're working on environmental justice. The impacts of long COVID on communities and populations. Again, with that health equity lens, food and nutrition security, and much more. Well, we are absolutely focusing on the impacts of climate change on health, and we have seen that in the United States and around the world. That can be extreme heat. It can be fires with the resulting smoke that we saw for the first time ever in New York City and in Washington, D.C., sea level rise, and storms that are exacerbated by climate change. And, of course, the health impacts are are with those same vulnerable communities that have health disparities in terms of other issues. So our new Office of Climate Change and Health Equity, with its sister Office of Environmental Justice, is looking at that at HHS and really working across the government.
That was the voice of Admiral Rachel Levine, who served as the Assistant Secretary of Health for the Biden administration. And you might remember him best. He's a man who dresses like a woman, very long blonde hair, looks like a little bit like Ben Franklin in a long wig. And I remember seeing him in National Airport in a baby doll dress, carrying a purse and a little Mary Jane shoes. That was the last admiral that was ahead of in charge of our health for the United States under Joe Biden. My, how things have changed. Because a few months ago, I had the privilege of listening to the current admiral, Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services. He gave a speech at the Museum of the Bible that was so impactful, and I just wanted you to meet him. And so we've made that happen, and he joins us this morning. It's Admiral Brian Christine, again, the Assistant Secretary of Health for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Admiral, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Sandy, thank you so much for allowing me the privilege to be on with you. And as you played that sound, played the words of Richard Levine from the last administration, you know, I think there are so many things that really bring into sharp focus the difference between the Biden administration and the administration of President Trump. So many things that are different, but I have to say is that one of the things that I think really shows the difference between the two administrations is you had Levine and now you have me, a man in a man's uniform, advancing the president's and the secretary's agenda. Such a difference. It's a privilege to serve this president. It's a privilege to work with Secretary Kennedy. It's an absolute privilege to try to restore trust in our healthcare institutions and our healthcare policies. It's a privilege to wear this uniform, to wear it proudly as a man. So I think that what you just had us listen to really highlights the differences between then and now.
Absolutely. I want people to remember, as I remember myself, what a nightmare that was. Well, that's a different day, and God willing, we'll never return to that. But let me say something about your past, because you are a doctor who's been in medicine for a long time. You had a very successful practice in Alabama. You have your degree from Emory University. You did your residency in urology at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. You are an internationally recognized leader in men's health, which I thought was really interesting, Admiral, because, you know, everything now is women's health, women's health, women's health, women's health. And I personally, I'm not a feminist. I believe that men and women have equal importance before the Lord, different roles. So I'm not a feminist. And a little bit of this really annoys me. My question, though, for you is, why men's health for you? What drew you to that?
You know, I saw it. That's a great question, and I appreciate you highlighting that, because you're right. For 35 years, I practiced as a urologist. For 25 of those years, the last 25 years of my career, I exclusively practiced men's health. And I was really drawn to men's health because I could see just the need there is for evangelizing about health for men in this country, the need there is to recognize that there is a crisis in men's health in this country, and it was a natural fit for me. Understand that in the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health, we have our Office of Women's Health, which is incredibly important, and I'm incredibly supportive of that office. And we've made great strides in women's health, and we should never, ever back away from advocating for good health for women. Never back away from that. But we have to understand that we do need a parallel track for men, because at the Department of Health and Human Services, you know, our mantra is we are attacking and trying to cure chronic disease, diabetes, hypertension, mental health concerns. And in all of those categories, unfortunately, men lead. So advocating for men's health is advocating for MAHA, the Make America Healthy Again agenda. They go hand in hand. Overall health. We have women's health, we have men's health, of course, children's health, but men's health and women's health are two sides of that Make America Healthy and Great Again coin, and I am a strong advocate for men's health, just as I am for women's health.
Oh, that's where I am, too. I just don't understand Well, yes, I do understand how it became so imbalanced. So I'm cheering you on. And I know in your position now, you deal with both, which is as it should be. Now, you had this thriving practice in Alabama and well known for the work that you'd done, lots of papers written, lots of acknowledgement. And suddenly you get this phone call to join the Trump administration. Can you just describe that moment? Just be fun to hear.
Yeah, it was, after the election, even before the election, I had a desire to serve in what I hope would be a second Trump administration. And after the election, I was able to reach out to the transition team and sent a CV and said, listen, I'm very interested in serving. And, of course, that led to, some phone interviews, and that led to further interviews that they got more in detail and more in depth. And then ultimately was invited to come to Florida and interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And his team, which was an incredible moment in my life to do that, to meet this man whose family has given so much to the country. And if you put politics aside, let's face it, his uncle and his father, they shed blood. They literally laid down their life for our republic. And so to meet him and interact with him was truly special. So that was just a great day that I will never forget. I won't forget that after the interview, I interviewed with Mr. Kennedy before he was secretary, Mr. Kennedy at that point, and then I had another interview following. As I was waiting out in the waiting area after my interview with RFK Jr., he came out to speak to the secretary, either to talk to about some business things going on, and he walked over to me and put his hand on my shoulder and said, "That was a great interview, Brian," and that just meant so much to me. It was really, really impactful and moving, and things went forward, and then, another set of interviews, and interviewed ultimately with the Presidential Personnel Office, which was incredible. After that interview at the West Wing, I walked over to the Cathedral of St. Matthew. That's here in Washington, D.C., because I wanted to reflect, I wanted to pray. And as I walked into the cathedral, as you walk down the central aisle in front of the high altar is a marker in the floor, a disc in the floor that says, this is where the body of President John F. Kennedy laid in state before his burial at Arlington. And so I knew walking into that cathedral, I'm a Catholic Christian, I was on hallowed ground, but then to stand at that point and to be where our fallen president had laid, and to have just completed the last interview that was going to be the final interview I would have before whether I would receive the nomination from the president to potentially work with another Kennedy, it was really impactful for me. And I literally got on my knees and I just said, Lord, I want to serve. And yes, I want to serve this president. And I want to work with this Secretary of Health and Human Services. So I'm just tremendously blessed to be in this role. You're right. I closed down my practice. I moved here to Washington, and here we are. Now I'm talking to you after having met at the Museum of the Bible. I mean, what a load of blessings in my life.
Well, I want to point out just something. I just have a friend who is also a doctor who was approached to do something in the administration with I don't think it was your job, so I don't, not indicating that at all, but something.
Sure.
And he really pondered it seriously, but chose not to give up his practice and move his family to D.C. And I wanted to underscore the sacrifice, because I know it looks wonderful, and it is a wonderful position. That the things you guys do there are incredible, but the burden of it is tremendous. And to give up your practice is not a small thing. And I just wanted to underscore that. And also, you just said this, but you are obviously, because I heard you, I know that from your words, you are an unapologetic Christian. And I found it interesting that you gave a speech to the new religious, President's Commission on Religious Liberty. You gave the speech to them, and that really impacted you. Can you just say a word about what occurred to you? Because I thought it was a great observation.
There was the Commission on Religious Liberty, the Task Force on Anti-Christian Bias, and the Commission on Religious Liberty, two different entities, were able to speak to both of those. And I think it's important that we do recognize, and that we do teach our children, and that we do evangelize, and we do speak to the fact that we are one nation under God. and that our founding fathers, the men and women who brought this country forth from 13 colonies into the greatest nation that has ever been, our republic, that they were individuals of faith. They believed in the Lord of hosts, and they believe in a higher power. Many of them, of course, were Christian. Some were not. We have Jews who were involved, and we're all children of the book. We're all children of under the Lord of hosts, and I think it's always important that we tell people that, we remember that. That is the foundation of our country. That's the foundation of our rights, the foundation of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. We should always be, as you said, unapologetic about that. I believe that America has a very special place in the history of the world. I believe we have honored our Lord, and he honors us. And I think we need to continue to honor him in all that we do. And so this is a great opportunity, being in this office and being invited to speak at things like the Religious Liberty Commission and to speak at the Museum of the Bible for the night before the rededication. It's a privilege to be able to do that, but we should always be unapologetic. That term that you used is so right for this conversation. We should always be unapologetic. We should always stand on our values. And when we have faith in this administration under President Trump, we do not have to check our religion at the door to serve. And that is a dramatic difference from the prior administration, no question about it.
Well, and just having you speak at those things, and here you come in after Rachel Levin, and now let me choose your words here. You said that you felt by asking you to speak and by your ability to just unapologetically state your faith, that the Luciferian, this is your word, the Luciferian ways of the past are coming to an end. And I just think that's amazing, and I think we needed to mark that moment too. Now, so you come to this huge, isn't Health and Human Services the largest department in the government?
Yeah, massive budget. We reach and touch so many lives here in the United States. We do so much. There's so much potential for good that can be done. There's so much good that we are doing now under Secretary Kennedy versus the evils. Truly evils and the bad things that were done in the prior administration. So, yeah, you're right. It's a huge department, a huge budget, great impact and great reach.
Yeah. All right. So help us understand the scope of your duties. You know, it's hard for us civilians to quite get all of that, but I know they're vast. So kind of give us an idea of what you're tasked with to do.
Yeah, that's a great question. The Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health, I like to look at it as three different roles. We are very much involved in our office in producing health care policy, higher health care policy. We are very much involved in producing that policy and enacting that policy and working across the different divisions of the Department of Health and Human Services to pull those policies together. So there is a policymaking role. The Assistant Secretary for Health also has a communication role, and that's one of the things that interested me about this position very much, in that not only do we develop policy, but we then communicate that policy to America writ large by doing things like you and I are doing now, interviews, getting in front of the camera, doing what we call direct-to-camera work, so, you know, video messages to the American people. So the communication role is very important. A lot of folks don't realize this, but the Surgeon General, who has very much of a forward-facing role in healthcare, the Surgeon General actually comes under the Assistant Secretary for Health. So the Surgeon General reports to the Assistant Secretary for Health. So communication is a big part of what we do here. And then if one is appointed or if one is nominated and then Senate confirmed as the Assistant Secretary for Health, you can serve as a civilian or you can request a commission from the president to serve in uniform as the senior flag officer, in other words, the senior admiral for the United States Public Health Service Commission Corps. And I chose to do that. I had served previously in the Medical Corps of the Georgia Army National Guard when I was in medical school in Atlanta. I'm the child of Colonel Alexander Christine, who served with distinction in the United States Army on his second tour of Vietnam. He was severely injured, losing an arm and a leg. My younger brother, Bobby Christine, Major General Bobby Christine, is the Judge Advocate General of the Army. I have two heroes in uniform in my life. That's my father and my brother. And so we have a deep respect for men and women who choose to wear a uniform and serve this country. And so it was very important for me to want to serve in uniform. And so I did request commission from the president and was granted the direct commission as a four-star admiral. I have all the duties and responsibilities and privileges of having those four stars on my collar as any other four-star flag officer in any of the uniformed services. It really is a privilege. So that was very meaningful for me to serve in uniform. And part of that was, too, I did think it's a direct opposition to the prior administration when you had a man in a woman's uniform as opposed to having a man in a man's uniform serving this president at this time. And so kind of those three roles for the Assistant Secretary for Health, and I'm just it's the pinnacle of my medical career, and serving in uniform is the icing on that cake.
All right, so there is a lot to do when you follow an administration like the Biden administration. Before you joined us, I played a clip of HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy talking about what he inherited. What a mess. You know, the vastness of it, the corruption, you know, just incomprehensible, really. Like, how in the world did we get to this? And how did nobody ever, you know, think about cleaning this up, even just in terms of size and unwieldiness and the lack of effectiveness? So you get all this stuff. What's that first meeting like? I mean, where do you start to try to clean something so large and out of control and ineffective up?
Well, my agenda is the agenda, of course, of Secretary Kennedy and President Trump, and so I take my lead from them. But you're right. So much to be done here, and so much that's been done already under Secretary Kennedy and under Dr. Oz and under Dr. Bhattacharya, and then, of course, the other heads of the different divisions that we have here, including myself. There's so much that we have done to rein in excess spending, to repurpose dollars that were being spent in grants on really nefarious things, influencing our children in very negative ways. You know, we've done so much already under the leadership of Secretary Kennedy, and there's certainly more to do. And we're going to continue to push that. We realize that our time is, you know, relatively short. You know, if it's just a four-year presidential term, our time is relatively short. The clock continues to tick, but we always keep our foot on the accelerator to advance the health of the country, to make America healthy again, and I always say to make America great again, and to clean up the mess that we inherited. We are doing good things here, Sandy. We really are, and there's more good things that we're going to do, for sure.
Well, you know, I've known of those good things, but because I know people that know people, but I have felt from the very beginning that, with few exceptions, there hasn't been enough light shown on what you guys have actually been doing. Like, let me just ask you one issue that I know you and I share this. You're pro-life, and you don't like tax dollars being spent on abortion. So what impact, I mean, how is that, what have you guys done to change, what can HHS do to change our approach to abortion as a country?
Well, I think one of the things that we can do, and we have done, and we continue to do, and I will always do, is to champion life. Anytime that I speak, anytime that I talk, always to echo the words of President Trump and Secretary Kennedy, is that every abortion is a tragedy. They've said that. And I agree with that, and we'll continue to say that. Every abortion is a tragedy. You're right. Federal tax dollars should never go toward abortion. I know that this administration is absolutely committed to that. So again, you know, we have to always push forward in advancing the agenda of life. One of the things, most importantly, under Dr. Bhattacharya at NIH, no recent, this is new, this was just announced within the last couple, about 2 months ago at the March for Life, thank you very much, is that there are no federal tax dollars being spent on research using aborted fetal tissue, which is a huge advance. Dr. Bhattacharya, also a strong Christian, a truly good man, as well as an amazing researcher, he feels very strongly no research is going to use our tax dollars if that research includes aborted fetal tissue. Incredibly important. So always speaking to life, standing for life, doing things like we see at NIH, doing things like we do here at the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health? Will we stand for our children? You know, our report on gender dysphoria in minors that was released earlier in the year, that came out of the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Health. That is standing for life, because corrupting our children who may be confused and suffering from a mental health condition, which is what gender dysphoria is, trying to corrupt them, to get them to think that men, that little boys can be girls, little girls can be boys. No, that absolutely is anti-life. And so we stand for life, we stand for our values, we stand for our children. That's what we do at HHS.
Well, let's turn for a second, because we don't have that much more time together. And I one of the things that I wanted to illustrate, before I go, I'm going to read some of the things that you said in this speech. But before I do that, you know, I talk for a living and I write. And I have to say, Admiral, sometimes I just feel God speaking through me. I do sense his presence. It isn't always that way. And I was just curious about you with this speech. How did you feel when you were writing? I guess I set you up in a bad way, but I'm assuming there was some inspiration here.
Not bad at all. And you know, as you know, when you have something like this, it's always a team effort. And so I have the individuals, particularly one particular young man, Tanner, who I work with as speechwriter, who crafted most of that. And of course, then we tweak it together. I give him my initial idea. I tell him what I'm thinking. He crafts a speech. Then we fine tune it. We change it together. But, you know, as we worked through this, we were both really inspired. You know, we sat around talking, and we talked about General Washington on his knees praying at Valley Forge. We talked about our founding fathers. We talked about the men and women who have served in uniform in this country, those young men who stormed the beaches at Normandy, you know, the individuals at Fort McHenry as the bombardment was going on, men like my father, who served in combat, shedding blood for the country. Talked about the women who wore uniform, like my aunts, my mother's sisters, two of her sisters. One was in what was called the WAX, and one was in the Waves during World War II. They were in uniform. They weren't carrying arms, but darn it, they were serving this country, and they were fighting the good fight. So we reflected and talked about all these things as we broke that speech out together. And it just kind of flowed, and it came together. Tanner worked so hard on it, and then, like I said, tweaking it together. And then as I delivered that speech, sometimes people would say, well, you get in the zone. It wasn't in the zone. I do believe the Lord was present with everybody who was there that evening, all of us there. And it was just a magical moment for me, and I will cherish that moment forever.
Yeah. Well, I believe God spoke through you, too, and I'm going to kind of, this is specifically about the country. These are the words that you spoke. You said, as we approach the 250th anniversary of the moment when 13 distinct and humble colonies became one nation under God and defied all odds, casting off the tyrannical chains of the most powerful empire on earth, let us remember that they did much more than win independence. They gave birth to the greatest governing charter ever conceived and launched the most successful, resilient, and prosperous experiment in human history. So let us speak candidly tonight about the paramount and undeniable force that has guided this nation from its first uncertain steps to its greatest aspiration, the hand of God leading us from the swamp to the stars, shaping us into that shining city upon a hill illuminated for the world to see. Love it. I love it. And you also, go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, it is, you know, delivering those words and the rest of the words, delivering all of the speech, but, you know, parts of the speech like you just quoted there, it's thrilling to speak those words, but you get a lump in your throat as you're delivering the speech, because if you truly, as I know you do, and as I know the men and women who were there that night, if you truly love this country and you truly bend your knee only to the Lord God, and you believe in the American experiment and the American dream and believe in our republic, then, you know, you get kind of a lump in your throat as you're saying the words during the speech. And, really meaningful. And I'm glad that you enjoyed that speech. I am, because that's very meaningful for me. It's one of the reasons I wanted to be in this role again, to have that forward-facing ability to speak, to use the bully pulpit of the Assistant Secretary for Health to speak words like this about life, about our government, about our country, about our privilege as Americans and our blessing as Americans. So it's nice to kind of relive that. Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome. Well, Admiral, I lived in D.C. two different assignments, I suppose I could say. The last one was during the Obama years, and I remember so distinctly how men who wore the uniform in a different way, like you wore the uniform that night, this beautiful, and they were not allowed to name the name of Jesus, to pray in his name,
right,
to speak out about righteousness. I remember going to a funeral for an admiral, a Navy commander of a ship. I knew his son and family, and the chaplain there wore the white uniform. It was a black chaplain. And you know what? He defied Obama by praying and preaching at that funeral. And I remember just felt like crying. I was so grateful to him. He didn't care. He just didn't care. And I want to remind people of that. We had a taste of oppression. Did we ever have a taste of oppression? And the fact that you're in this position and you can be so bold about your faith is nothing short of a miracle, and we just have to stop and be grateful for that, as I know that you are.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I mentioned my brother is the Judge Advocate General of the Army. You know, that was probably a month ago or so. I was over visiting him, and we were getting ready to go to work. And he was not wearing his daily uniform. Was definitely dressed in one of his nicer uniforms. And I said, "What's up?" And he said, "Well," I said, "I'm going to Secretary Hegseth's prayer breakfast." So there it is in the Pentagon. There's a prayer breakfast. You know, when I was working my way through the Senate confirmation process, one of the senators on the HELP, that's the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, the committee that I had to have my hearing before, one of the senators then on that committee was Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. Of course, now he's Secretary DHS, but when I met with him privately before the confirmation hearing, we had a great meeting together, and afterwards he said, "What can I do?" I said, "Brother, will you pray for me?" And so we embraced, and we prayed for each other. And so that's the kind of people you have in this administration. It is a new day for America. It is a better day for America. It's a day that could only have happened under the presidency of Donald Trump. So, you know, we're so blessed to be a part of it.
I agree with you, and I think we need to remind people of that. However they feel about President Trump, he's provided platforms for these good things and defended and insisted. And I remember the day, you know, the day after you spoke at the Museum of the Bible, and my husband and I both went to all day, you know, to the prayer and repentance at 250 on the mall. It was hotter than blue blazes, and we sat out there for 7 hours. But here's the thing that struck me. We had the president, you know, just dropped in a video, but he's reading 2 Chronicles 7:14, "If my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, then shall I hear from heaven and heal their land." This is what our president read. Then we had the Secretary of War sharing the ways that God has intervened throughout our history. We have the Secretary of State doing the same thing. And then the Vice President. And then it closes with the Speaker of the House calling the thousands of people that were there and people watching everywhere to get on their knees and personally repent. I mean, honestly, Admiral, when have you ever in your lifetime seen that kind of open profession of faith in Christ in this nation? Never in my lifetime, I'll tell you that.
No, it's amazing to see that. And we've had presidents who are good, strong Christian men, and you and I are old enough to remember Ronald Reagan, and of course, President Bush's. I mean, individuals whose faith really meant something to them. Now we have this administration under President Trump like nothing we've never seen when it comes to standing strong for faith. And I will tell you, here at the Department of Health and Human Services, I have the privilege of working with so many individuals, particularly the young men and women who are here, who their faith is strong. They're committed Christians. They're committed people of faith. They're committed to serving the Lord of hosts, the King of Kings. And it is absolutely inspiring to be around these individuals, two of whom are sitting in my office right now as we do this interview. We I mean, it's amazing, Sandy. It is. This is like faith central at the Department of Health and Human Services, and really throughout this administration. Like you said, it's something like we've never seen before. And you know, all it takes, we have to always remember, all it takes is one bad election outcome for us to go in reverse and for darkness to raise its head again. So I'm so glad you do what you do.
Yes. Well, the same back to you, Admiral. And so I wish you well. When I think of you, I'm going to pray for you. And I'll look forward to hearing
Amen.
From you. Give another speech, because I'll be listening, because this was a great one. And Admiral, I know you inspire people around you because of your deep faith and because of your family serving. We share that love of country and love of God. I don't think you can separate the two, honestly, but some people
Agreed.
Do. Anyway, all right, Admiral Brian Christine, thank you for everything you do. Assistant Secretary for Health for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, God bless you and your team. And thank you for joining us, sir.
No, thank you so much. God bless you as well. And listen, be well. We'll be happy to do this again any other time. And I certainly hope our paths cross again. It would be great to get together, break bread, and speak again. That would be wonderful.
Well, that's so kind. Thank you so much. Well, for now, goodbye. And this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors. Just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
I have some good news, though. As part of President Trump's DOGE workforce reduction initiative, we're going to streamline HHS to make our agency more efficient and more effective. We're going to imbue the agency with a clear sense of mission to radically improve the health of Americans and to improve agency morale. We're going to eliminate an entire alphabet soup of departments and agencies while preserving their core functions by merging them into a new organization called the Administration for a Healthy America, or AHA. We have two goals. The first is obvious, to save the taxpayer money by making our department more efficient. And the second is to radically improve our quality of service. I want to promise you now that we're going to do more with less. No American is going to be left behind.
All right, so that's his voice. And, you know, they've done so many good things. They have really transformed that whole transgender business, the abortion business, and the COVID thing. Look what's happening here. Anthony Fauci, it looks as though he may be indicted, and he has been indicted, as far as I can understand, for lying to Congress and, you know, and doing much worse things, really being responsible as far as the facts seem to be leading us, responsible for that gain-of-function research, making himself wealthy on that, and his compatriots developing a disease in this laboratory, and then just happening to have a vaccine that could treat that disease and making millions of money in the process. Now, none of that's been proven in court yet, but that is the allegation. And that's the atmosphere. And those are the people that were working in Health of Human Services before Robert F. Kennedy came, before that, before President Donald Trump came into office. This is what he did. And I think we need to stop and just give him credit. And, of course, Admiral Christine is just another wonderful part of that. So I think it's time to be very grateful today, and I am. So I thank God for that. Well, Preborn is our sponsor. We couldn't do this without their help. And you know what they do. They're in the business of saving babies by showing mothers the ultrasound photos of their babies. And it works beautifully because I believe it's God's way. And when they see their baby in utero, they, surprise, surprise, decide they don't want to let it be killed or kill it by their own hand with the RU486 pill, and that's a whole other issue. But this is a redemptive way, and that's why we love partnering with Preborn. If you'd like to help them, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.